This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 266 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Marketing Communications Specialist Anne-Marie Tracy. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about the first phase of the reentry of employees to the town buildings to provide services to the public. No public access is allowed in the buildings at this time. The drive-through window at the municipal building will reopen. The library will return to the reserve and contactless pickup. Beaver Street Recycling Center will reopen for full service, not just yard waste, but with only credit card payments. Additional details were posted to the town webpage Friday about the various department moves to reopen in this first phase. Other departments, like the Senior Center and Recreation, are still working on plans for some of their operations to return with safety protocols in place to protect the workers and the community. Jamie acknowledges that the municipal building is a social center of sorts, and while he wants to get to a re-entry point for the public, it's not now, and he does need to proceed cautiously. The FY 2021 budget gets a discussion at the Joint Budget Committee coming up on Monday, May 11. The Town Council Budget Subcommittee will meet with the Finance Committee and the School Committee Budget Subcommittee to coordinate amongst these three groups, planning around the downward revision in the revenue forecasted, and begin to make adjustments accordingly. These adjustments will then be reviewed in the Finance Committee budget hearings after Memorial Day. We also talk about the need for community engagement for this budget. The discussions will require some serious decisions. So get involved. Be informed. Now is the time. We get a preview of the department spotlight on the work of the archivist at the Historical Museum, and then close out the conversation with some reflections on the pandemic period. We learn that Jamie's grandmother is 101. Yes, she was born during the last pandemic in 1918-1919 and before women could vote. As well as finding time to walk, exercise, and take mindful breaks during this time of the pandemic. The recording runs around 55 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. So Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, in our weekly session with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Anne-Marie Tracy, our Marketing Communications Specialist, for another week of Talk Franklin. Good afternoon.
Great to be here,
Welcome
Steve.
To Friday.
Welcome to Friday. It's always a good
Hi, Steve.
Sign. It's the end of the week.
Yes. We'll kind of wrap it up and go out with a bang, maybe, or just a nice conversation. We don't have to do any bangs. There's enough things going on around there anyway.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of going out, at some point, you're starting, and you already are starting, in terms of last week's announcement that came out, and you teased it during our session, and more is happening next week in terms of the reopening in phases.
That's right, Steve. So, you know, I think what we're doing here is all good news. I think that, you know, it just feels like to me, based on the data that the governor has been reporting and what we're seeing on the ground, you know, and given the orders, importantly, that come out of the governor with the face coverings and other things, that we're starting to see, I think, a little bit of a glimpse into our future, right? And I think that's a balance of personal responsibility among everybody, whether the law says it is or not, to adhere to the social distancing guidelines of 6 feet, washing your hands quite often, making sure you disinfect spaces that you were in, making sure that you have face coverings with you at all time, wearing them, and recognizing that the only way we're going to really beat this and really turn the corner in the next couple months, or as the governor called it, you know, the second half, the fourth quarter, is to really adhere to those things. This is really what we're going to be doing here for the foreseeable future. Whether you work in town government, don't work in town government, I think you're going to see this as a series of stipulations and things about employee pre-screens, patient pre-screens. So I think what we're talking about today is, you know, what does the next month look like as a kind of phase back into things? I only have control, of course, over the town, the municipal departments, the superintendent of schools have direction over the school department. And the governor certainly has a lot of authority in his executive capacity. But starting this Monday, May 11th, we are going to open up the drive-through window back at the municipal building, which is a very lucky resource we have. And our treasurer collector, Carrie Bertoni, has put together a rotating schedule of employees to come in and out to take our level of work to the next level, both A, from a customer service perspective, by being available at the drive-through window,
right?
Which I know for a lot of employees feels like a good connection to the community to do their business. But also, you know, folks have to realize we're not going to be a full schedule in the treasurer's office, but we're going to be doing all of the things that we need to do that I just mentioned and more to make sure that our employees come back into a safe working environment. And so the drive-thru will open on Monday for the foreseeable future, regular business hours, fully staffed, as a point of contact, for the public. It's a safe way to do it. I mean, we're lucky to have it, right? So that's really good news. The public library is going to be opening again on Monday for a skeleton crew to do online book orders, like takeout food, where you can schedule between 9 and 1 each day. You can make your order of X amount of books. And most importantly, from the library director, they see this
I
as
actually
a really
think
big,
they're doing five.
They're doing five. Five days
per
Monday
to Friday. So Felicia had originally asked for Saturday.
Five
so maybe,
items. Yeah.
Oh, a maximum of five items. Okay.
Saturday.
So they're going to do five books, but I think the value here is in particularly children's books are obviously the most popular and most used. And so without access to those books for very young children, it's important. And so it's important to note, there is still a prohibition on the public from coming into any of those buildings. These will be employees only.
Correct.
And that prohibition of the public being able to come in to do business is likely to be in effect for a while. You know, certainly well after Memorial Day. You know, we'll wait for the governor's advice on that. But those are two big things. And I would mention to cap off the municipal building. Obviously, some treasurer collector staff are going to come in to help deal with all of that, as well as all the work associated with the deferred tax payments. You know, the treasurer's office is a well-oiled machine, right? And it's one of those that works on routine, and the staff there know exactly what to do in the most efficient way possible. Everything they click, every button, everything, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, this is a little bit of a disruption for them. They're amazing staff that have really tried not to skip a beat and have not, but getting a few more people back in there to process all of that is actually really good for the organization. It's good for our revenues. It's good for tax compliance. It's good for reporting to the state. And it's important for customer service. The town clerk's office will also be a part of that, mainly because they are in the position right now where they're essential. The state has not been able to, without the court, Supreme Court issue earlier in the month with signatures, we're now into census. And the reality is the state computers need to be accessed, and the state computers are not allowed to be taken home remotely. I will admit that it's a little bit concerning to me. That the Secretary of State has not allowed that. I'm sure there's some logistical issues. I have not followed it correctly, but the reality
is I can at least talk to that.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, because okay. While you talk to the Community Preservation Act as your intro to Franklin, I was part of the Unisys team that actually installed the motor voter system back in 95, and Unisys moved me here to Franklin. So the, well, I, that was my choice, but they moved me to Massachusetts to deliver the project. And the, it's not so much the computer. It's 350 network points.
Right.
And yes, the 351 communities, Gosnold is the only one that does not have a hardwired connection back to Ashburton Place. All the others, the 350, do. And it's a point-to-point connection. There is no internet involved. So from a security perspective, it's the utmost, because you have to be at, what, the two terminals in Franklin. I think there's 40 in Boston, 30-something in Worcester.
Yep, that's correct.
That's what it is. So you have to be in the building at that terminal on that network.
That's correct.
So and even if they just moved the system away.
From a secure perspective, Steve, you're, and just to, you, everything you just said is accurate. And it does have a direct line. There are two stations in the office. There have been for years.
Yep.
Each town has their own quantity based on their population.
Correct.
It just feels strange to me that we're not able to get to a point where, you know, everything else is secure. Bank of a, you just look at security in terms of cloud technology. Doesn't feel like we were totally prepared for this.
We could spend almost as much time.
But it's a fascinating thing, and I think actually this conversation, as you know, I like this stuff. But it's these are the details we go through.
Sure.
You know, I mean, and it's not like I just make this stuff up out of thin air. I mean, no. We got to talk to the Secretary of State's office. They have a lot of deliberations internally. They're out looking, like you said, for the 350. We hope Gosnold gets a connection some point, but that's what happened.
Gosnold at the time.
And it's just, it is what it is. And so, you know. Mm-hmm.
The Gosnold clerk said, I'll take the ferry to Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard to be cheaper. They don't have a whole lot of transactions to do anyway. The other point, without getting too political, the Secretary of the Commonwealth is the same one today that we did the installation for.
I look at it from what we've done in the last three or four years, Steve, and I know you've been actually a part of this. So it's a little tangent, but look at all of the investments the town of Franklin has made in in Google, in Viewpoint, UniPay.
Yep.
The fire services are on Viewpoint. The DPW is on Viewpoint. The Beaver Street Recycling Center, which we'll get to in a second, is a great example of this.
Yep.
Where now we're only taking online payments for to drop off metal, a TV, a mattress, whatever it is.
Yep.
And we tried it out a while ago when we first went into this, and people just bring up a slip of the receipt and they drop it off. It actually reduces a tremendous amount of work up at the recycling center for the staff and reduces all contact. So we're just going to make that part of the program from here on out.
Why not?
But we were ready for this.
Yes.
We could make that adjustment on the fly.
Yeah. This,
I do think the state in some ways got caught flat-footed on this security issue. You can, nobody can argue with me and tell me, and you're not. I know you're not making this case, but nobody can tell me that somehow the clouds, a cloud system or a more decentralized system like that would be less secure. I just find that to be difficult.
The rest of my background from between Fidelity, John Hancock, Citizens Bank, absolutely. Those are all financial institutions, well-recognized. They do things securely. It could be done. In this particular case, there's just not the willingness to move from a system that certainly works. Yeah.
And I also recognize, from a ground level, the staff are well adept to how this system goes. Any new system require a lot of training, it would be a multi-year phase in. But I actually made this argument, not to pat ourselves on the back, but it is worth mentioning. I mean, I made this argument several years ago. Again, a lot of the folks that would probably be listening are familiar with this, that getting away from that, that in-house infrastructure right now, if we were on the old systems, all of our stuff would be residing on a server in a building. And what if that went down in this crisis? We would have less access to it. It might have been a little bit more secure, but I think we've realized that in the global scheme of things, a lot of this cloud technology and a lot of these systems that every mature major Fortune 500 company in the world is using is actually quite safe. It is. And secure. And I think as we move forward, it's only going to get more safe and secure. So, so with all that being said, Teresa Burr, town clerk, and our assistant town clerk, Nancy and Susan, are going to have to get back into the building for the foreseeable future to work on the census, which, as you know, is an incredibly important thing. And I appreciate all the communication you've done, Steve. I've seen online and on Twitter about encouraging people to fill out the census.
Yeah, the other piece in the conversations with Nancy and Teresa, too, was the other aspect was the registration confirmations. Again, because they don't have the system, they weren't able to send the confirmations out. So they need to get into the office in order to do that. It's not that the registrations didn't go through. They did. They're there. They just haven't been mailing out the confirmations because they need the system in order to do that.
They need the system in order to do that. And to draw a contrast about what we're trying to do internally, you know, I'm not allowing the public to come into the building. A lot of people come and get married at town hall. Well, Nancy or Teresa are going to have to do that wedding outside. And those are things we've been doing ongoing. As you can imagine, marriages are ticking up a bit because of all the legal reasons associated with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Teresa and Nancy have done a phenomenal job keeping that going. They'll still meet people outside. They'll come up with alternative spots to be able to do it. They're still doing social distancing. I just think those are like the little stories that I love to, that really go well on your show, because I said it on my department head meeting. There's just so many little victories that are going on every day where people are able to do the work and do it safely and still allow our customer service to not get scaled back. And that's a great example. Most people out there probably wouldn't be thinking, geez, if I'm married, I'm not thinking about that.
Right.
So, but it's going on every day. You know, Nancy's swearing people in, they're getting the marriage certificates out. I mean, and so, you know, we are differentiating ourselves from the services that we are providing, and that's part of the reentry plan. It's to really phase this in slowly, get ahead of the curve like we've been all along, and use this next week, for example, as kind of an opportunity to practice and hone what is going to be the new normal coming forward for a couple months. And we'll wait and see what the governor says later this week, and then we'll take it from there. But you know, the only other couple of things I'd say really quickly is the DPW, their full staff as well as the custodial staff are having soft integrations this week as well, with the anticipation that either the week of the 18th or the week after we'll bring back full crews. Again, still doing things like for the water and sewer teams, those staff have to be rotated. It sounds good that we want them all in, right? Because we're taxpayers and we want to, but the reality is I can't lose, if there was an outbreak, I can't lose the whole team.
No.
They are first responders like everyone else.
Yeah. Well, that's part of your risk management and
part of the
protocols.
Risk management.
You've got
Absolutely.
To do that.
Part of the protocols. And we're going to be doing temperature screenings. We're going to be doing questionnaires with every employee. We're going to do mandatory face coverings in exactly the way that the governor outlined. And you know, we're really pushing the message, which applies to all of our employees, but also applies to every member of the public. This isn't just about you. It's about everyone. And we have to be conscientious of others. The last thing we want in Franklin or anywhere are to have continued outbreaks like at the Biogen conference in March or the Walmart in Worcester last week, where one person decides they don't want to play ball, 80 people then get it, or 60 people, or 10 people, 5 people is too much.
Right.
And we have to do the things we need to do that. And we all sound like broken records, and it's not part of my normal personality to say these things, but it's clear that that's the way we're going to get out of this and get back to what people really want, which is their individualism and their freedom to be able to go back to restaurants and concerts and the library and all the things that we do that are fun, beaches, you know, all the things that we do that are fun. So, I mean, that's about it. I mean, I will mention that on our website, Anne-Marie will be posting shortly the latest update that we're giving you a heads up on here. And then we'll see what next week brings, and then we'll just keep adapting to the latest information.
And I think to reinforce a couple of points within that, so you've got a phase plan for some specifics that we've already talked about. And for departments that haven't specifically been mentioned, I'm sure there's already discussions underway in terms of what would their steps be so that they would be in some future phase. And some of them may depend upon the further guidance, but the discussions, just because they're not being shared, are still happening. So there are still plans underway.
And a great example of that, a couple of them really quickly, are the senior center, where mm-hmm. we're trying to get a similar program that Collins had up at the high school with the student lunches.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to replicate that at the senior center so that hopefully when June comes, we can start a grab and go lunch system at the senior center. Karen Alves and Aaron Rogers and Paul, the chef, and Colin from the high school are all trying to discuss those plans now. Another great example would be Ryan in the recreation department, working with him to see what the lay of the land is. I mean, obviously it's going to likely be a while until rec programs, summer camps, and traditional stuff move forward. That's something we're going to have to wait for the governor on. But another example is like the community garden. I did speak to Ryan about that earlier this morning, and he's going to work on that. I think that that's something that is lower hanging fruit than really a summer camp, where we should be able to open stuff like that up. The bigger question are going to be about playgrounds and basketball courts and some of those things. That's really, in my mind, actually one of the harder decisions to make, because you just can't be disinfecting that at a rate where you can, and you're opening up large crowds possibly. You can't really police it. Yet, you know, in your heart, you know, you need families for things to do. And so that it seems like something that would be there, but that's been one of the more mixed bags I've seen from other towns, where there's a lot of different approaches to it. So you're right. Those are the things that we're talking about. In addition to the superintendent trying to get all of the teachers and students and families in to get their stuff out of the schools, it appears that I'm not over quoting her, but it looks like that will hopefully be done over the next week or two, and hopefully maybe even accomplished by Memorial Day, which would be
victory. Heaven forbid we find too many science projects in the lockers.
I know. we were talking earlier about possibly gym clothes.
Yeah, that's what I'm not looking forward to picking now, up. Right?
Yeah.
You know, some people just want to throw all the gym clothes in a pile and burn it up. You know,
yeah, I don't need that back.
No. No.
So, you know, I think you're right, Steve. A lot of those discussions are happening nonstop. Plexiglass for when we do get to the point where the public would be able to, you know, return. There's no doubt that things of that sort are going to be what you see.
Mm-hmm.
At like the library counters, you're going to see those probably at the town hall, at the clerk's office. You're probably going to see the treasurer collector's office not open the gate to the counter, that everybody will be required to go through the drive-thru, because it's just really it's just that much safer.
Sure.
And well, I don't need to spend the money on the plexiglass.
Yeah.
There's no cash anyway.
No cash.
So,
you
know, we're trying to avoid I've actually talked, Steve, to a bunch of citizens over the last few weeks, folks that used to come in and pay a visit and say hi a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, a lot of, you know, obviously older residents in town. And I've done, you know, left me voicemails, and I've really tried to call them all back and talk to them, because I do understand how much of a social focal point the municipal building is for the school community and the town community. And I've tried staying in touch with some of those folks that frequently come in to say hi or give me a hard time. You know, I know a lot of people want to come back in to do that. Very important to me that we get to a place to do that. On the other hand, you know, having citizens come in to just give us a check is just an unnecessary risk. Just simply is. And until we see the numbers, which I'm keeping my fingers crossed, both sets, until we see the numbers cross in another month, until we see the numbers go down, I think a little bit more in the next month, I think it's highly unlikely before June that there'll be any decisions at building, but we're talking about this stuff nonstop all day. You're absolutely right.
Agreed. And the hardest part is this, the insidiousness of this particular virus. You can't see it really, but you have to do the social distancing and cleaning. The glory at the end is if we, when it ends and we look back and say, we did it for what? Well, we did it because we weren't impacted by it.
Yeah.
All that we did actually worked, which is perfect.
What you don't know is what you don't know. And we never want to get to a place where we say, oh, geez, good grief. Look at how bad it was.
Right.
You know?
And then I think to your credit and the town on the whole, to the extent that you can and you are doing and being mindful of the restrictions, the key is the social part of the social distancing is still required. Right. So those relationships are still needed. I mean, we've all heard Governor Baker say, I'm a people person.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you and others have said the same thing. And certainly the counselors and school committee members, et cetera, that you're all people for that reason. And social aspects are still required. We just have to be careful about how we do that.
Yeah. Everyone's having to adapt.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it is what it is for a while. And I just think the governor nails it with, if you don't do this work now, you know, it's
kind of pay me now.
COVID-19, eventually the goal is that you want to have a vaccine, you want to have testing. You know, that's outside my, you know, purview, obviously.
Right.
But until those issues get solved.
But Franklin doesn't have a little lab somewhere that we're doing some vaccine stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there are people in Franklin, as we've seen on the news.
But not part of the
town.
They
are
yes.
on the front lines
yes.
of this.
Absolutely.
But, with, you know, Greg Chiklis, for example.
Yep.
And the work that's being done at Clark Cutler on the Gowns. I mean, I not surprising, right, Steve, that Franklin has a role in a lot of this. Not at all with our industrial capacity. But it's really about seeing the forest from the trees and realizing that this is a marathon, not a sprint. You know, we're going to have to continue to be diligent until there's a vaccine, a widely available vaccine, by the way, and fully accessible testing. And then you're into a position where at some point COVID-19 just gets added to the lists of other things that you can get.
Yep.
Right.
Like the flu, like the common cold, like bacteria, like strep throat. This is how it all gets transmitted. It's just we've never been put something like this in decades where we've all had to, in a modern world, the social media and the exposure of the media in general, we've never been in a position to be in such a frenetic state over something that's literally covered the globe, right? And so we're now being exposed to things that probably good practices we always probably should have been practicing. We've all acknowledged that we all touch our faces too much. I mean, it's like possible, right? But
human nature.
I mean, I'm like all over my face all the time, right? I mean,
I'm always adjusting my glasses. So just, but, you know.
But you know, we're all going to have to adapt and hopefully be educated and be more responsible in the future if we're going to be able to keep this and any other issues from becoming more ill. So that's a little bit of the details. Everybody, if they're listening, should go to franklinma.gov. And look at Anne Marie's incredible portal with more information than you could ever possibly want. There are search features, there's department spotlights, there's governor's updates, there's community resources for people who've lost their jobs, there's unemployment links, there's, if we don't have it on there, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so people really should be checking in on that every day.
It's a nice little box for the schools, so it replicates completely on the school side. On the other side, which within the school realm, you've got as much info, if not more, there too. Yes.
Right. And the reentry update will be up later this afternoon with all the details on everything going forward with the library and the DPW and the drive-up window and just all the information that people would need to know in order to take advantage of some of the limited reentry services that we'll be starting next week.
Yeah, and we'll be reemphasizing the phasing nature of it to continue that mantra. Yes, agreed.
But it feels good to go forward. It feels good to take steps to go forward. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
It's been an exhausting week. I will not deny, and I'll just lay it out there because that's just the way I am. But, like, you know, going through all the logistics of this, it wiped me out. But on the same end, Anne-Marie brings up a really good point. It's also equally as invigorating because it just feels like, you know, we could be on the climb down the mountain, and that's part of the importance of this.
Right.
It doesn't feel like we're going to service everybody the way they want. We know we're not going to be able to do that, but in a couple weeks, if we can get the DPW guys out there, street sweeping, filling potholes, planting trees, they're going to do, you know, one person per car. They're going to adhere to all the mask requirements. You know, I think that visibility, mowing the lawns, getting the common cleaned up, you know, hopefully soon we'll be able to get a haircut. And then we'll all feel a little bit cleaner. The common will be get a haircut. We can get a haircut. You know, and, you know, obviously it's just something to look forward to that
baby steps.
Right. Yeah. But it feels good now that I've got the directives out and we're starting to announce it. Hopefully I can take a couple of days off on the weekend and Monday. I think it'll feel more invigorating to everybody. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hopefully.
Right. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. And then come Monday, having been refreshed, hopefully, you can get back into this other thing that's out there that's called the budget.
Oh, the budget. So
your other favorite topic.
I was really happy to see Senator Spilka's comments in the paper, not the message that it's going to be an ugly year. But I was happy to see some updates. I'm expecting the legislators to be coming in, and we're really lucky for a lot of reasons to have Karen Spilka as our senator. But I'm anticipating in one of the future council meetings soon that Senate President Spilka and our legislative delegation, Rep. Roy and Senator Rausch, will be able to visit a council meeting and give us the lay of the land, and which would be important. But for right now, to catch people up to the process, we're having a joint budget subcommittee meeting on Monday, the 11th at 5:30 on Zoom between the council, the school committee, and the FinCom, finance committee. And we're going to talk about the budget model that I put out, which resulted in $2 to $3 million worth of additional revenue loss that we're projecting for next year. And that does not include any reductions in state aid. That's just for our own local receipts and in the expected leveling off of the construction industry due to the financing issues they may have. I did scale the budget back. I put a budget model out. We had a budget subcommittee. Chairman Kelly, Matt Kelly, called a meeting last week and then asked for a meeting of everybody this week. And then the finance committee hearings on the budget will be in the end of May after Labor Day, Memorial Day, and then in first week of June. The germane takeaway here is this is not a perfect situation. Normally, for those listening, this is our end of our budget season, quite frankly. We're headed into the final stretch right now.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you get to Memorial Day, and all of us in who've been working on a budget for 9 months, generally take a little breather, and we kind of reportion some of our time that we're working on budgets to overseeing the summer help program with the DPW and the facilities programs and the schools to get things cleaned up. And, you know, we focus on recreation programs and things. This is obviously a dramatically different situation. What we're going to have here is what I call, this is really spring training at best. And when we get to July 1st and we have an approved budget, that's when the regular season begins. It's going to be a day by day, week by week, month by month analysis of everything in the budget and what we're spending all the time. Because we just simply don't know what our revenues are going to look like, what state aid is going to look like. I know everybody in Massachusetts is going to do the best they can. We don't know what the construction industry will look like in the second half of this year. We don't know if banks are going to be lending money out for major projects. You know, there's so many factors in the air.
Sure.
Really what we're looking at now for May, Steve, is a blueprint and a framework of how to start the year, where normally we start the year and everybody just starts going to do their work. But this is going to be the inverse of that. I think the discussion will unquestionably revolve heavily around the school department and the school committee and the many decisions that they have in front of them.
Yeah, major math problem there.
And I think hopefully people listen to this, but this isn't a new conversation with the school department. It's something that's been going on for years. It's also been going on for the entire time I've been here.
Yep.
And the thing that has been keeping us out of this harder conversation about what's the vision for the future of the Franklin School District. Given the declining enrollment, given the uncertainty now with remote learning, given the competition we have of many educational institutions, that there's so much choice, birth rates, sociological factors, geographical factors, job transitions now, unemployment high, there's so many factors to consider that I think now, as I look at the view from 30,000 feet, you know, it just has to be the time where we say, okay, as a community, what is the vision today, this September, and for the next 5 or 10 years for the Franklin Public Schools? And in a way, while this is a hard debate, it will require a lot of hours and time from everybody, including myself and the school committee and the school department. It's something that, you know, in another way, to look at is a really good opportunity to engage the community in particular about what the future looks like. I think that is the key that I would leave off the budget conversation with. Happy to answer your questions, but people are busy out there. We know that. This is the time to get involved. This is the time to engage.
Yep.
Not next year, not last month, not next week, now. And get involved in particular with the school conversation, mainly because, I just do a budget for the whole community and I give them a number. We're not experts on our side in school policy and regulations and what best practices are and that type of stuff. Neither are they experts in laying out water mains, online programs for kids at the library, or
sewer lines, paving streets, and things of that sort. Yep.
And picking up the trash and all the other stuff we do, or producing reports. Yeah, so, I think that the community, if you care about public education, if you care about your kids, your family, the future of your child's opportunity in the Franklin Public School District, that is going to be where the meat of the conversation is likely to take place.
Yeah, I know the superintendent and others in the schools have spent time on the Portrait of a Graduate, which I think the publication of that should be coming out. It certainly will help form some of the discussions around this is the ideal of what we want to go and how we're going to get there. Because then it's going to be complicated by a lot of the topics we've just talked about, less money here, less money there. What is opening the schools going to look like, right? How are they going to do social distancing? What are the bus routes? How do they do social distancing on a bus stop? I mean, all of those things are rather unknown at the moment. So yeah, this is going to, but to reinforce your point, yeah, coming out of the budget subcommittee earlier, that was how I left off the notes that I published that, if at any point in time you needed to get involved, that time is now.
Yeah.
And I will continue to beat that drum for you as well, because it takes two to tango. And with all due respect, you can make a decision, but you need to have our input in terms of what decisions you can make.
If you don't have children in the school system, right? If you have grandkids in the school, right? But if you care about your property value,
yes.
If you are concerned about the fabric of the community,
Quality of life.
If you're concerned about the quality of life, you know, I mean, you know, look, you know,
talk to any realtor. Yeah. They'll tell you. Yeah, the first thing people want to know when they're moving is what are the schools like? Talk to me about the schools. It's a huge factor.
It is the factor for many. Mm-hmm. And as you point out, Amory, you know, it is a substantial factor. And, you know, I think that people are going to really have to get involved to understand the pluses and the minuses. And I would use a quick model. I mean, we had a lot of naysayers about the stormwater stuff. And we held those forums earlier in March before the COVID crisis came. And the feedback I got from the people who got engaged was extremely positive. And, you know, those individuals spent maybe 2 hours out of their day once to go become more informed about something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's no reason why there shouldn't be 500 people on a school department, a school committee meeting discussing the budget or whatnot. You know, because, you know, people really, really need to buck up and get involved in that. And it's less about, I think, the now, right now, the decisions they have to get made about the budget. People have to remember this budget is a blueprint for next year. It is not a guarantee.
Yeah, it's not a one and done.
It's not a one and done, right? Exactly, Steve. But what's the vision for the long haul?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there's a short-term conversation about remote learning. I think the Denmark solution freaked out a lot of people here. Because they're taking extremely aggressive tactics on this. It almost seemed inconceivable to occur here.
Well, it is a plan. So let's at least use that as part of the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I mean, again, I think there's going to be requirements coming from the state on this stuff.
Yes.
No idea what those look like.
Yep.
Probably some unfunded mandates. I don't know what the Student Opportunity Act, you know, where that is in their discussion.
The state revenues, the Student Opportunity Act as an increase, I would wager probably not likely at this point, but that's just my two cents outside. So we'll see.
Well, it's worth noting on that point, Steve, that, you know, when I put in this model right now, the assumption of the governor's budget in January. Now, yes, we know that that's going to get blown up.
Right.
But it's the only baseline I have right now. I can't base it off last year and make an assumption of 20% local aid cuts. I think that would be unfair. I think that, you know, and every town right now is kind of just putting their hand in a hat, picking out a number, right?
Yeah.
Some people are moving forward with their budget as they had drafted. Some people are doing what I'm doing, where I'm just saying, okay, 25% across the board. Chris and I, the finance director, went through every account, made some assumptions in that. I put that in the packet. But what is, we were already going to have less local aid than we had in FY20 when the governor put out his budget. So we were already going to receive fewer dollars from the state this year from last year. I have no doubt the House of Representatives and the Senate would have upped their number over the governor in some sort of way. But a lot of that was hinged on the Student Opportunity Act formula and what those assumptions were. And I think you're spot on, Steve. It's one of those things that's going to take a little extra time to sort through.
Yeah, it was also based on prior discussions, Chloe. It was also based on the revenue expectations that were set, oh, by the way, in December, if I recall, which at that point in time were rather rosy. Nobody knew that this thing was going to happen in March and April and really put a significant dent. What was I? So the April revenues for Mass were half the prior year. That's staggering.
That's an accurate statistic. I think it's misleading. I think it's shock value data. It's not about you take the number versus the previous year, right? But in this case, the number was so big, it was to convey a point in the media. Yes. But I'm not so sure that that's the number that matters. The number that matters is in April, how much money came in versus what they projected to bring in April of this year, go off on this a lot, Steve. I can't stand the past. We're not there.
No.
You know, these data points into the past, it's like we're here today and we're moving forward. You know, and so, you know, to me, it was more about what's the number that they expected to bring in April at the state level and what did they collect? We know mm-hmm. that number is not going to be positive, right?
Right.
But to me, that accurately reflects where are we going now. And I'm going to throw out a little statistic for you. For example, Gus Brown this past month, and we'll see it in Anne-Marie's department spotlight next week, but brought in almost $30,000 in revenue in online permit fees of inspections that he completed in April. It's certainly lower than we would have wanted, but we still kept revenue going, even remotely, and business was open. I think the state probably has a lot of revenue that came in April for a variety of reasons. And so, you know, what's that number?
Sure.
One number that is consent is agreed upon out there at this point is that they are going to likely have a $4.5 billion difference between what revenue was projected and what revenue was projected before this and what revenue is projected now. That unquestionably will have an effect on cities. It's just got to have an effect.
Yeah.
You know, what it is, we don't know. And Senator Spilka threw another curveball, which I thought was a good one, which was, what is the conversation from local governments and state governments to the feds about what kind of financial assistance could be there? As she duly noted, these crises before all had financial assistance from the federal government to help patch state and local budgets. So that's another factor out there that, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out before we can really actually know what's going on.
Because numbers are numbers, and one data point certainly doesn't tell the whole story by any means. So I think the only reinforcement is stay tuned. Things are going to be changing, mm-hmm. but you need to be part of the conversation in order to have some impact. And don't get surprised if you didn't, because you could have known.
Right.
So in that at least is coming, but on a more positive side, at least you've got another spotlight out there just today, I think.
Yes. I spoke to our archivist, Rebecca Finnegan, who works through the Franklin Historical Museum. She filled me in on her work, her remote work. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic. By the way, her enthusiasm for what she does comes through, you know, even through a Google Meet, you know.
Infectious may not be a good word, but it was contagious in that way.
Yeah, she's very passionate about what she's doing there, and you can tell. Obviously, when she first came on, the museum, anyone who's been to the museum knows there's a lot of stuff there, and then including everything in the basement. So she's mm-hmm. been working to organize, catalog, you know, in many ways starting from scratch with lots of policies. They had a very dedicated volunteer staff, you know, which they had worked on the museum for a long time, but you know, volunteers have other jobs and families and other commitments. So to have someone like Rebecca there to really focus all of her energy full time on the museum and the preservation of the museum and the organization of the museum is just a really great thing for us to have here in Franklin, because we have an amazing resource right there downtown. And obviously she said she misses being there, you know, doing all that hands-on work. I know she spoke, one of the things that she shared was that her favorite thing about the job is just that the surprise nature of it. You know, she's never sure what she's going to find in a box. but so she's been doing a lot of work from home. And one of the main things is when they get ready to reopen, Rebecca, along with a number of other groups that she works with and local historians, have been redesigning the floor plan. So when they do reopen, they'll be working with facilities to get a new exhibits in place and really just be ready to go. And at some point when we are allowed to invite the public back in, you know, there'll be a lot of new things on display. But until then, obviously, she's still sharing a lot of the history on their Instagram and Facebook accounts. You can certainly follow them there. And one of the things she's currently working on is the sort of preservation of information from this strange time we're all living in right now. It's right now, you know, when we're in the thick of it, I feel like we may not be thinking about the interest that this will hold 50 years from now, 100 mm-hmm. years from now. And so she's been working to preserve and collect information from residents, share pictures, share information of how you're staying connected, what you're doing, what you're not doing, because, you know, people in the future can only know what we save. And what we share with them. So you can certainly follow the Historical Museum's social media, check out their website, but they're asking to the public to help, you know, preserve this time for posterity with hashtag Franklin Stays Home, or share things on their social media, tag them in it. And right now, I don't think we want to remember much about some of the things that are going on. But in the future, it'll be a, you know, something to study, something that right. you know, future generations will look back and say, "Wow, you know, what a period in history," and mm-hmm. and what we can save for those generations to learn from, and is important. So it she's is. Doing an incredible job, and it's really interesting to see all the history that she has found in Franklin so far. I'm anxious to see what she has next when they reopen.
Yeah, I know. I've certainly, in my walking around, doing reporting while walking around, I've been able to take photos of kind of emptiness where there had never been emptiness.
It's eerie.
It is eerie, but those are also priceless photos to the extent that, totally. You know, it was... I think it was the first full Friday after the shutdown. It was a gorgeous night. I went walking downtown, and those are gorgeous photos. Mm-hmm. It's looked like photo sets, and yet there was nobody around.
Yes, it's strange for sure, but also interesting to your
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely worth capturing and saving and having a memory of mm-hmm. what we're dealing with and how we're getting through.
So. Right. And in terms of getting through, I know at one point in time, Jamie, you hadn't had a walk on a Friday. And I know you, by the time that you get to the end of the week, you're almost ready to go to bed right about now. But have you at least been getting some walks in as well?
I have been getting a lot of walks in, and I've really been enjoying them. And I think, you know, like I think some of us, you know, I think, you know, it's been a good time to, you know, be able to do that with family and, mm-hmm. and you know, and, you know, you know, I think everybody's in a very reflective period of life, no matter where you are, whether you lost a job, you still have your job. You know, somebody got ill in your family, somebody had a passing, you know, you're worried about your family. Governor Baker says it all the time. You can't see your 91-year-old dad. I can't go see my 101-year-old grandmother. She turns 101 in a few weeks. You know, really? I think we all, you know, we're all, yeah.
Congratulations.
What a life. 101.
Yeah, I tell her all the time, I really hope I don't have your genes. I don't want to live to 101. you know, it's like, but I mean, still, I mean, she's as sharp as a tack. But, you know, my wife and I, everybody, you know, we have to do grocery shopping for family and other things. I mean, we're all in the same boat. And walks are good for that.
Absolutely.
It's also good on walks to see other people, even if it's on the other side of the street.
Yeah.
It's good to see dogs and kids. And,
well, it's a positive aspect too, because there is life after this, because she was born in the last pandemic, right? If I do the math properly.
Wow.
It's exactly right. I know. It's she was born a year before women had the right to vote. Put that somewhere and
yeah
about it, you know, and
she's got a lot of stories, I'm sure.
It's like she joked with me once, she goes, "Oh yeah, you think when I showed up at the polls at 18 they just let me in, you know?" Like, you know, like it's like today, you know. And it's, I mean, I've been very lucky and throughout my whole life to have, you know, one of my mom's side had five generations alive until I was probably 9 or 10.
Wow.
So I had my great-great-grandmother, you know, and, you know, those stories never leave you for the rest of your life.
Sure.
Just because it's just, you know, you realize how fortunate we are to even be in the world today that we're in.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you can't tell, I think we're all, again, a little reflective more than we probably normally would be when our busy lives are just clicking along. But
yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with that. I think taking the mindful approach helps our, I mean, my own personal pieces, the body and mind are together. That's just my own. And you got to have both to be healthy. So, you know, having the walk, even if it's quiet in the woods, or even if you got a podcast on, you're still having a walk.
Yeah. I will say it is good for the soul, Amory. I will say for me, it you know, as you, I think we spoke on the show before, like I'm a swimmer, right? I've never gone this long in my life without
being in a pool
once or twice a week. It, you know, relatively speaking, not a problem. Suck it up. You know, but from a health and mind perspective, you know, I mean, I got to go fill that gap somewhere else. And, and there's just simply no walk that's going to compete with a 30 minute, you know, three quarter of a mile to mile long swim a couple few times a week, right? Like it's just not going to happen. So, and I'm, as you know, I'm a hiker. You know, I've struggled with that a little bit because I know the trails are packed. You know, it just feels like, you know, I could probably, you know, I'd really like to go hiking, but I know they had to shut down Wachusett and a few other state parks in New Hampshire.
Just because of volume.
Monadnock because of the flood of people, rightfully so. So I tried to stay away from that and tried to do my yoga every day and, you know, try to at least, you know, get the breathing under order. And it found that to be a lot more powerful than I thought it was going to be before. When you're doing a mile swim in the pool, you come out pretty, you know, you come out ready to take on the world, right? You know, yoga's a different way of looking at it, so charge. Oh yeah, the staff sees me every once in a while when I get in at 8 and I've already been at the pool.
You're already pumped up and ready to go. Yes,
he's turned into Jeff Nutting. He's walking around like Mach 5. What's wrong with him? Even one time, I think Amory, I think it might have been you. You said, "Oh, you must have went to the pool this morning." Either her or Alicia. So I have been getting in the walk, Steve. I know, you know, we've all been trying to do the best we can, but, you know, today it will be, I've been planning my grocery shopping, funny enough, during rain.
It definitely works. You said that once and I copied
way
you.
Way less.
Sure.
I have walked into Market Basket almost every time when it's been raining. So I'm like, now that the call is going to end in a few minutes, I'm hoping it starts raining in like an hour and I can go up and go grocery shopping for the week.
Either that or Saturday morning in the snow. You know,
Saturday morning in the snow. We asked Brutus this morning, are the plows ready?
And yeah.
He kind of grumbled. You know?
Yeah. Indeed.
So that's the scoop, Steve. That's the it's good to be here, and thank everybody out there for listening to our voices, Amory and I, and give some updates for the week. And you know, we look forward to be back again next week with hopefully another round of good news.
Yes, as
and
we.
And happy Mother's Day to all those moms out there.
Happy Mother's Day
Sunday.
Mother's Day Sunday. Yeah.
So what are you going to get for Mother's Day, Amory? You're going to go an opportunity to go pick up your kids' gym clothes at the high school. Right? That's your Mother's Day gift.
And then clean them, right?
Happy Mother's Day to me.
But, yeah, hopefully this Sunday, you know, hopefully the weather looks like it's going to get a little bit better for Mother's Day, which will be nice for everybody to as if we haven't had enough time at home.
Not that there's much to do, but
usually you're right. Aren't you usually, Amory, we're looking for like a calm day, right? Mom can take a day off.
Yeah. I haven't had that in years. My kids played lacrosse and there's always a game. So I haven't spent
even on Mother's Day. Huh?
I have not spent a Mother's Day not on a lacrosse field in a decade. So it's
until
gonna be
this
strange.
One.
It's gonna until be
this
strange.
One. Yes. Until this one.
Do you have any Zoom calls scheduled for Mother's Day?
Or is your Maybe. Husband's tea time on Sunday?
No, he knows better than that.
Indeed. Well, thank you both and enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch you next time to talk
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Have a great weekend. Hope everybody has a good time.
Yeah, enjoy the weekend.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com.
The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.